Welcome to The Workplace, a podcast by Cal Chamber. I'm Erica Frank, Cal Chamber's General Counsel and Executive Vice President. And back on the podcast today, we have Bianca Saad and Matthew Roberts, who are here to share their knowledge, again, keeping with the New Year theme of some new laws that took effect on January 1. And the laws that we're highlighting today are actually laws that are a little what I call sleeper laws. They haven't really been highly publicized. They haven't been spoken about very frequently in the news. And they are laws that employers should be aware of. So welcome, Bianca and Matthew, back to the podcast.
Thank you, Erica.
So let's first talk about domestic partnerships and the law that changed with regards to domestic partnership. Bianca, maybe you could tell folks what was the prior law and how did that change and why we're bringing it up today?
Sure. So registered domestic partners were previously limited to partners of the same sex or partners of the opposite sex over the age of 62. So what SB 30 did was it expanded basically who can apply for registered domestic partnership. And so now under the new law, any individual of at least 18 years of age or older may register with another individual as a domestic partner.
And as far as registration, where do folks register for domestic partnership status?
They're going to register with the Secretary of State. It is a procedure. It's not something – sometimes people think that registered domestic partner, it's you just decide that, you know, you've lived with somebody long enough
right.
and you can go by that. So there is actual documentation that's involved.
Okay. And why are we bringing it up today on the podcast for employers?
Well, marital status is a FEHA protected class. So it's essentially expanding, again, who can be a registered partner, which is going to entitle them to those protections. And also for situations like somebody who would apply for California Family Rights Act leave, registered domestic partners are covered under that. So, again, you're expanding who could apply.
Cover.
Exactly.
Right. So if I need to take some time to care for my registered domestic partner who happens to be of the opposite sex of mine, that now is covered, whereas before you had to meet the limited opposite sex or same sex over the age of 62. Okay. The other thing, too, is oftentimes when we do these trainings, a lot of employers might say, well, can I ask for proof? What's the sticky edge about asking for proof for domestic partnership?
Yes, that is a very common question that we get. You really just have to look at, are you requiring proof of all of your married employees? You're certainly entitled to ask for proof, but if it's not something that you're doing across the board, then you're not going to want to single any particular group out and only require it of registered domestic partners.
All right. So if we haven't been asking for marriage certificates of our married individuals, we're not going to be now asking for the registration certificate, so to speak, of our domestic partners.
That's correct.
Okay. Moving along, Matt, let's talk about flexible spending accounts. This is a perfect time of year for a lot of employers that offer flexible spending accounts. The year ended in December, and some plans offer a little bit more leeway time to use it. But we know with a lot of flexible spending accounts, if you don't use it by the deadline, you lose it. So what did the legislature have to say about flexible spending accounts?
Yeah, they had that use it or lose it provision in mind when they passed a new law that went into effect on January 1st, which requires employers to provide two forms of notice to their employees before their funds are set to expire under that use it or lose it provision.
And what does the form require? What kind of notification? So backing it up, prior to this law, employers didn't have to really notify their employees at all. Most of their plan administrators probably did. But what type of notification and why two notices?
Yeah, so the notices required can come in two different forms. The law allows for one to be electronic, but the other cannot, of course. The statute itself is interesting is that it suggests certain forms of notice for the employers to use, whether it's a phone call, text message, email, regular snail mail, and even in-person communication. What the employer needs to do here, and as you're right, the benefits plan administrators usually been the party that's been notifying the employees. So this is why this is kind of a new burden on employers, mm-hmm. because they've never had to really deal with FSAs
right.
and this notice requirement. They want to ensure that the employees use those funds that they've paid for,
right.
essentially under the plan. So when you make the notice, you make it any time before the end of the plan year. As you said at the outset, that could be December 31st. It could be March 31st, depending on the plan and what you have. Make one notice electronic, one notice not electronic, and you've satisfied the requirements under the law.
Okay, so there's no timing as far as like 3 months before the plan year is set to expire. So you could do it arguably at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, the statute's very brief and makes no specificity as to when the
okay.
notice, just that it's done before the end of the plan year.
Okay. And I do think that, you know, the intent there is just to remind employees, look, you've got funds in your account. Make sure you use them before you are no longer able to. So I would believe that the intent was a little bit of a reminder to those employees, so maybe closer to when that plan year expires, although there's no requirement for that.
Absolutely. I think that's right, Erica.
Okay. So, yeah, those are two laws that I don't think that many folks might be aware of these days, so I'm glad we're able to bring to everybody's attention. A couple of other things that we just thought would be a good idea to highlight is what's going on with the sexual harassment prevention deadlines. I know for a long time we were operating under a January 1, 2020 deadline, meaning that employers with 5 or more employees would have to make sure their employees and supervisors were trained by the end of 2019, essentially. But we know, and we've talked about on the podcast, that there was an effort to extend that deadline, which did actually go into effect. And Bianca, maybe you could just quickly remind employers as far as what the new training deadline is. Yeah. So SB 778 that passed last year, it did extend the deadline to January 1st, 2021 for all employers to get that sexual harassment prevention training. And then we also had a sister bill, SB 530, that addresses the part of the law for temporary and seasonal employees that is also extended, that beginning January 1st, 2021, those employees need to begin receiving training.
Okay. So for those of you that are familiar with Cal Chamber's products, we do offer a California-compliant sexual harassment prevention online training course for supervisors and employees. So employers might want to have that on their radar to make sure that they are meeting the new compliant requirement. And for those of us that didn't train in 2019, you have an extra year to go ahead and accomplish that training requirement. Now, another thing to talk about that I think a lot of us forget about are those posters that we have to hang in the workplace. California employers do need to add wall art to their walls. That includes a number of federal and state notices outlining rights for their employees. And Cal Chamber does offer a all-in-one poster that has everything nicely fit together in one very large poster that employers can hang. And usually every year, some poster is going to change. So Matt, could you just remind employers of what those posting changes apply to for this year?
Yeah, so most of the poster changes this year come from the Department of Fair Employment and Housing. They have 4 posters that are required to be posted as part of compliance with the laws under the Fair Employment and Housing Act. That's your DFEH discrimination and harassment poster, your family care and medical leave and pregnancy disability leave poster, which was formerly the CFRA notice.
Right.
Your rights and obligations as a pregnant employee and your transgender rights in the workplace. Those are 4 required posters from the DFEH. The changes are minimal, but they're required.
Right.
And so you need to update those posters. Cal OSHA's issued a notice in August of 2019. It's been a few months ago, but just as a reminder, you need to update that poster as well if you haven't done so.
Okay, good reminders. And then I also know we did have some pamphlet changes as well. Bianca, could you speak to those pamphlet changes? Yes, so the pamphlet changes involved the state disability insurance pamphlet, as well as the paid family leave pamphlet and the unemployment insurance pamphlet, and then lastly, the sexual harassment pamphlet.
Okay, so just a few housekeeping matters that all employers need to be aware of for January 1 to add that to their to-do list. Make sure you have all updated posters in the workplace. You're distributing the most updated pamphlets. And don't forget that lactation accommodation policy that we talked about in the previous podcast that now needs to be distributed to employees at time of hire and when requesting parental leave. All right. Well, that concludes today's podcast. Thank you, Bianca and Matt, for attending. And thank you all for those that are our consistent listeners. We appreciate the support that you provide to the podcast. Thanks for listening to The Workplace. Please subscribe, share, and comment about Cal Chambers Podcast by visiting calchamber.com.